Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode. I'm so excited. You guys know I love love, and I love having friends and former clients and present friends come back and inspire the heck out of you. I was going to say inspire the pants off of you, but that's probably not what we want. But inspire you to know that love exists for you. It's a when, it's not an if. And I'm bringing back my friend, Laura, who is a physician in the greater Chicago area. And Laura and I have some kismet connections. Let's just suffice it to say she went through Smart Dating Academy and found love. But more importantly, I'm going to sit in the passenger seat and I'm going to let Laura tell you her amazing story, because I think you'll see a lot of yourself in Laura. So Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Bella, for asking me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. So, you know, we're connected through someone very close to you, i.e. your sister.
Yes. Yes, my sister and you were Pi Phi sisters in college. And my sister nudged me a number of times to try to connect with you. And I finally did when I was ready. I think it was the right time. But probably years after I should have.
But that's okay, because spoiler alert, Laura has found the lid to her pot. Well, why don't you, Laura, just tell us a little bit about you, because you're fascinating and awesome.
You know, I grew up in the Chicago area. I come from a very stable family. My parents are still married after 62 years.
Amazing.
Amazing. And he was always a bit of an overachiever in school. I was valedictorian in grad school. In grade school and high school, you know, I was a musician. So I was in the orchestra and the band.
That you really were an overachiever.
Yeah, a varsity athlete. The one part of my, childhood adolescence that was a challenge was I was born with a large birthmark that was mostly like on my left arm and my neck and my chest. And I had that removed slowly over time, probably up until the age of 10 with plastic surgery.
Oh, wow.
Kids can be cruel. And so when you have scars or you look different, they definitely, you know, can tease you. And then, you know, going through puberty, not only was I all of a sudden 6 feet tall, which is awkward when you're, you know, the tallest girl in the school.
You are literally 6 feet tall.
I am. Well,
I forgot that.
I have shrunk a little bit, but I'm about 5'11 now. 5'11 and a half. Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'm jealous.
When you're in eighth grade and you're 5'11.
Not so much.
Not so much. So, that, and then going through puberty, you know, I realized that the left side of my chest was not going to develop normally, you know, basically like picture a mastectomy.
Wow.
Which is what the surgeries did. So, I mean, my surgeon was wonderful. He, you know, he did what he needed to do, but that was sort of my story when I was younger. Of course, as I got older, I was just used to it. So I didn't really think about it as much. But I think it definitely affected my dating my dating life. You know, I didn't date much in high school. And then I developed a bad picker. Mm. You know, I really started falling for the guys that years later I realized were gay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's definitely a picker. You're like, I'm going to pick someone who seems good, but, and so they came out later. Is that what happened? Or they were gay and you just didn't know?
They might've been gay and I just didn't realize it. Yeah. Okay.
Got it.
Yeah. and that kind of continued on in college. So in college, you know, same thing. So I didn't really have my first real boyfriend until probably I was in my early 20s after college. And I fell really hard. It was only a 3-month relationship, but it seemed, you know, amazing and seemed like it was going to last forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, it was kind of one of those like summer romances, and then he disappeared.
Just ghosted.
Like, yeah, he ghosted. That was like my first total ghosting.
So everything was great. And then he was just like, poof, vanished.
Yes.
That's so awful. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was terrible. Awful. So that, you know, that took a while to get over. It was interesting because he popped up a number of years later and said, you know, that he'd been scared, that he never felt like anyone like this before, and he wanted to get back together. And by this time, you know, I was in medical school. I think I had just finished my first year of medical school. So I said, okay, you know, we'll date. So we're dating long distance because he's, I believe he was in Chicago and I was, you know, I was in central Illinois. And I just never felt the same way about him. I mean, he really treated me like a queen. I mean, he was a good guy. Almost too good in the sense that, you know, it's kind of funny now looking back, I can say like he kind of lost himself in the relationship.
Wow.
Like he always wanted to do everything that I did. And I remember at one point, probably telling my therapist, because I ended up getting a therapist at one point to, because I felt like I should be in love with this man and I'm just not. And I said, you know, sometimes it feels like I'm dating myself because wow, he's just like trying so hard to please me. So anyway, so long story short, I did finally end it. It just wasn't going to work. And then
how long did that go on?
I want to say at least a year.
Oh, wow. So significant. So he ghosts, comes back a couple of years later. You make it, you try it long distance for a year, but you're just not feeling it.
I'm just not. I mean, I tried so hard to make it work. And I was like, you know, I'm going to feel it. I just need to keep trying and, you know, I'll be in love with them. And it was like I worked too hard at getting over him. At least that's how I felt, you know. And looking back, I don't think he, you know, it was the right one for me. And since then, I mean, he's found his lid and everything worked out. But it was hard. It was really hard feeling so bad that, you know, he was telling me that I was his soulmate and then I couldn't reciprocate. So then, you know, I start residency. Oh, well, I guess the other thing, just because it was during that time to say, you know, so I had developed, thankfully, my gaydar, you know, remember that term gaydar. So I knew the gay men now. But then I was picking the emotionally unavailable, you know, in a different way. So like I had a friend with benefits in medical school that, you know, wasted a year, like thinking one day he'll realize that I'm the one for him.
Right. I am your lid. You just don't know it.
You just don't know it yet. So then I start residency, and at least as far as I remember, that was kind of the time that online dating was getting popular.
Okay.
So, you know, I started, on Match, because I didn't do it in medical school. It wasn't until residency, and it was free for women back then, which I think is so funny. And still though, I was going for like you know, the starving artist. I don't know. I thought that was my type. My type is a starving artist. Are they like the musician? You know, and not that there's anything wrong with artists and musicians. It was just like the ones, you know, I was meeting like the ones where alcohol was a little too important in their lives, or that didn't really have a job. So, you know, that kind of went on for a while. And then I believe it was after residency. It's so funny how time goes by and you're like, gosh, you know, putting things into a timeline. But I finally met my brooding artist. And, you know, mutual chemistry. You know, the problem with that is I pretty much like pushed the relationship along. So, and I was so excited because I felt like, you know, to find mutual chemistry is always so hard. It always seemed like either, you know, I was interested and the guy wasn't, or the guy was really interested and I wasn't. So, you know, to find someone where it felt like mutual chemistry, I'm like, this is, you know, again, this has got to be amazing. It. I was always just all in right away.
Right. And now you're like, I've got the spark. He's got the spark. This is it.
Yeah, this must be it.
Right. It's the stuff. Right. It's Disney. It's rom-com, yeah. Right? Like, wow, yeah. We both had the spell cast over us.
Right. Yeah, I just hated that not knowing, is this going to work out or not? So I would pretty much like jump all in pretty quickly and then figure it out later, you know, like, or just try to make it work because now I've already jumped in and can, you know, been convinced that this is it, even though I barely know this person. So yeah. And then of course the red flags, you know, I mean the same old thing that we all do. Like I went to see his place, and I couldn't tell you when, I mean, it was probably early on, but you know, his place was just taken over by Star Wars figures and space models. And then the rest of it just looked like a total tornado had hit it. I mean, you couldn't even see the rug because there was so much stuff all over the floor. And
oh my God, was that the first time you walked in there?
But of course, I remember thinking, oh, look how cute. You know, he's got this like hobby and he has all this cool stuff. And I totally, you know, swung it, like spun it in a positive way.
Of course.
Not realizing that when he finally did move in with me, which, you know, I also kind of pushed along. Guess what? My place looked just like that.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you walked into the Star Wars, Pokemon, space models, and you're like, great, it's to me.
Oh my God.
And he did. Oh my gosh. Okay. And now you're in your mid-30s.
Yeah, because I met him when I was 33.
Okay.
And a year and a half into it, you know, because of course my clock is ticking. Right. So I really, you know, I kind of pushed it along that he should move in. And it kind of like the timing in a sense, you know, worked out because his apartment was turning condo. So he had to move. But, you know, and this was typical of him. And again, like a bit of a red flag. He never really said he was going to move in. Like he was, you know, kind of on the fence about it, but he never figured anything else out, you know, so he didn't look around. He didn't say, well, you know, I've set up this other thing. He basically just did nothing until it was like game day. You know, we had to move out of his place. I mean, it might've been like the day before or something, but you know, it was like, okay, well, I'm moving in because I don't have any choice.
Right. Haven't made plan B, C, D, or E yet. So let's do this.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So, but you know, again, like I mean, it's so funny because, you know, I'm sure a lot of us do. You know, I have the journals from all these relationships.
Wow.
And like, you know, I go back and read them and I just like part of me is like, you know, wants to just go back and like, you know, smack myself in the head. And the other part is just cracking up because I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm so happy he moved in. Like all the red flags are just like right over my head.
You have blinders on. You have the red flag blinders.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so, you know, it, so basically, and I told him, I said, you know, I don't just want to move in and be like boyfriend, girlfriend indefinitely. Like I want to get married. So
I want a ring.
Right. So am I, you know, I kind of was like, you're moving in with the goal of us getting married. And I mean, he pretty much, I agreed to that. Not that it was his idea. We got as far as actually looking at rings one time.
Okay.
But, you know, what ended up happening, I mean, you know, we got a dog together, which again, not a good idea. Don't get a dog with someone when, I don't know. I just think it's, you know, it makes it so much harder when things don't work out, you know, until maybe
like you're, custody, right?
Yeah.
Having
yeah.
a kid together yeah, and then getting right. divorced.
And then trying to figure it out. Because I think right after he moved in, again, because, you know, I think I really had this like maternal instinct that was just like, I'm like, oh, let's get a dog, you know, because at least that was like my outlet for taking care of something. And it kind of turned out I was taking care of both of them because, so, you know, the artist part of it was that he was working from home as a graphic designer. And I was, you know, my first job out of residency, which was just super busy. And so I'm, you know, working these long hours, coming home to this house that looked like a cyclone hit it. And, you know, it kind of turned out he really wasn't working very much. I mean, he was an independent contractor. There wasn't much work. And he was depressed. You know, he had mental health issues.
Wow.
And so he would kind of just sit and like watch TV and buy stuff off eBay all day.
Make a mess.
Work.
Buy Star Wars stuff. And this now went on for years.
Well, it went on for another year and a half. So we knew each other for a year and a half when we moved in together. And we stayed, he was living with me in my place for a year and a half. And then basically what ended up happening is, you know, he kind of had an interesting relationship with his family where they would, their communication style was very much like, you know, every once in a while they'd have these big blow up fights and they wouldn't talk for months. And thankfully, actually, he was never like that with me. So other than when we were finally ending it and we were like, you know, fighting about why it was ending, it wasn't like a tumultuous relationship at all. It more was like, I sort of always felt a little bit like the mom, you know, like trying to, you know, like driving him to his psych appointments, you know, and just, you know, like, I definitely didn't feel like he was taking care of me at all. I sort of had
a mom. He wasn't a partner. He wasn't a partner.
Right, right. And again, I was so focused on that stupid ring. So, you know, I'm thinking, oh, he's got the ring fund and I know he's not working very much. So it's hard to, you know, get enough money for the ring. And in the meantime, you know, every once in a while, all these like space models and stuff from eBay would be coming in. And finally, I start thinking like, well, he's got all this money to buy these space models. But, and I mean, these were not cheap. You know, he was spending quite a bit of money on this stuff.
Hundreds of dollars probably on this.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where one time he actually flew to London to get this huge rocket model. And that was one of the, like, I was finally starting to, like, get the blinders off. Be like, okay, I'm waiting for the ring. I thought he had a ring fund. And now he's in London.
Buying C-3PO.
Buy this rocket.
Here's R2-D2 going to London.
No, that's exactly like, what we need in our messy apartment is this huge rocket.
Oh, my God.
So finally, it was Christmas of, I guess, you know, I must have been, so I was 36 because, you know, it had been 3 years. And I kept pushing for this ring. And we were up at my parents' place, which, you know, they live out of town from here. So we're out of town at their place. And instead, I got a pair of gloves.
Oh my God.
And then him and my dad had a little too much champagne and got into a talk about politics. And next thing you know, they're like screaming at each other. And my ex is like cursing out my dad, which, you know, I mean, I would never, never been in that situation before.
No.
So, you know, my dad basically is like, I never want to see him again. And this is like Christmas night.
Oh
so
my gosh.
I'm up in the, you know, in the bedroom reading and I'm just hearing this. And I'm like, oh my God. So we leave the next day. And even then, you know, believe it or not, I was like, well, you know, maybe I was somehow like making excuses. Thank God it didn't last very long. I mean, maybe like that week I talked to a really good friend from college and we're on the phone. I'm giving her this whole story of what happened and everything. And she just goes, what does he do for you? And I just started bawling. She still teases me about that. She's like, I just asked a simple question. You just started crying. Because I couldn't answer the question.
Oh my God.
You know, I was like, nothing. You know, he does nothing for me. Like, what am I doing? And it was amazing because as soon as I realized it, I was like, I was done.
Wow. So that day.
I mean, it makes it sound so easy, but.
No, but it means it was all building up. So even though you had the blinders on, it's like it was death by a thousand paper cuts. And your friend gave you the 999th paper cut about this inadvertently, right? It's the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back. She just asked you what you knew.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. It's this, I have realized, and you know, I realize I see it with my patients every once in a while when people say, you know, when we're talking about something, you know, like they're going through a really difficult time and people say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. At least in my experience, whenever I've said that, it always means I know what to do. I either just don't want to do it or it usually is. I don't want to do it. It's too hard to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I've done that in a couple relationships. I can think of another one where with the therapist, I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And it was like, yes, you do. You just don't want to.
Right. It's more like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this because I'm going to be single and starting over again. So you did know what to do. Right. And she poked, she put the needle into the right spot.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So that's my medical metaphor for the day.
Yeah. So I broke up with him, basically asked him to move out. I mean, in typical form, you know, he was procrastinating. It took him forever. I think it was like 3 months later before he found a place. No. Oh my gosh. So my mom had surgery and again, cause they were out of town, they were having surgery in Chicago and then they were going to come stay with me. And I'm like, you have got to be out of here before my parents come because, you know, my dad hadn't seen him since this huge fight. Do you know, he did not figure out a plan. And I was driving him and our little dog because he kept the dog because he worked from home and they were like two peas in a pod. So, you know, I mean, the dog was fine with him, but I had to drive them to a hotel nearby because he had nowhere to go and my mom was coming the next day and I'm like, I don't know what to do with you, but you have to get out of here.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you're like, let me find
now,
a hotel
but at the time,
and pay for it and do all of the things and take care of you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was so needless to say, I got a therapist because, of course, I felt like I was, you know, abandoning him and I was abandoning our dog and I, you know, felt so bad. And that's when, you know, again, like years of therapy, you find out that you're kind of like have this subconscious, like I'm not good enough little voice in your head. which I think was totally true and probably, you know, started like at a very early age with all the surgeries and the scars and all that.
Right.
And even during, you know, while I'm doing this therapy, I mean, well, I didn't date again for a while. I mean, it took me like 3 years to get over him. And I will say partly because, again, ladies, do not do this. I stayed in touch with him. And it was always like I had the dog as an excuse. Well, I want to see the dog because the dog is wondering where, you know, where his mommy is. And I was totally anthropomorphizing this dog. But then it just kept me connected with, you know, with my ex. So I would have gotten over him much more quickly if I would have just cut the cord. Which is one thing I love and hate about therapy. Like, I learned so much about myself, but, you know, they make you learn it on your own. So as opposed to when I finally discovered dating coaches and how they just are like, don't do this.
Your picker's broken. Here's what we're going to stop doing. And we're going to start doing this instead. Right. Coaching is very different than therapy.
Yes. I think they both are super important and have their place. But I do. Sometimes I think back and I'm like, it wasn't about the guy we just talked about, because I really didn't start talking to the therapist till after him. It was the next guy who then, when I finally was ready to get back out there, of course, you know, again, super sweet guy. These guys were all so, you know, sweet and had all this potential. It was like they had so much potential. If they just, in my head, I was like, well, if this just happens and this, you know, and I can really help them and, you know, help fix them or save them from their problems or whatever I was thinking.
I can be a doctor to them.
And we were long distance. So, you know, when you're long distance with someone, it takes, you know, longer to get to know them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, with him, the next person I was only with, I mean, only, it was a year. But at this point, you know, so I'm 39 because I got rid of the first guy at 36. That took me 3 years before I was ready to get back out there. Now I'm 39. Meet this guy who lives about an hour and a half away. It took about a year, a little under a year, to figure out that he's addicted to porn. Our first date, let me back up, because there was, of course, I ignored the most important red flag. Day one, when we were going to meet, I can still picture myself sitting on my bed with the phone. I mean, it's like it was yesterday. And he told me he just wanted me to know that he was really separated, not divorced, like his profile said. And, you know, I'm sure he had some reason why. I can't remember what he said. And, you know, again, I should have been like, okay, no,
you're married.
Right.
And you said you were divorced.
Right. Right. But instead I said, well, you know, I'll just meet him, because if there's no chemistry, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I don't know what I told myself, but of course I met him. And, you know, in my true Laura form, he's unavailable. So of course I'm like, oh my gosh,
he can't, ever be my lid. He's awesome. Potential. Yes.
Yeah.
Actual capabilities. Yeah. No. Yeah.
So that one ended, you know, a year later. I mean, and it wasn't even because he was still married, although, you know, it turned out he was never ready. Of course. I mean, he wasn't ready to move on, and he still was in love with his wife. But then with the porn addiction, and I mean, our sex life was, in fact, we didn't have one. And he always said it was because of religious values, but I think it was really, you know, for other reasons. So it was just like,
red flag after red flag.
Red flag after red flag.
It was like a walking red flag. It's a red flag with legs. Let's just call it.
I almost used to say, like, it would be so much easier if these guys were like mean to me, which I know is probably not true because, you know, women stay in toxic relationships all the time. But, you know, I, again, like, I remember describing this guy to my therapist as like, he was like this little puppy that needed to be protected. You know, I just had this like, so then I always felt so bad that I was abandoning them or that they needed me, when it was like, no, Laura, that's not your place. You know, you're looking for a husband, a partner, and, you know, someone, an equal partner, not, you don't want to be someone's mom, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to be your partner's mom.
Right. Their driver, their mom, their therapist, their doctor, their something.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny because actually right after him, I met another guy who was long distance and we went on only 5 dates. But after the 5th date, he was like, I just need to tell you that I have a porn addiction. And I was like, oh my God, do I have a sign on my forehead that says, date me? I have a, you know, if you have a porn addiction.
Come my way. If you're unemployed, red flags,
yeah,
collect Star Wars figures, have porn addictions, I'm your girl.
Yes.
Oh, you poor thing.
Oh my God. I know.
And so now you have figured out very concretely, your picker's off, you're picking unavailable men. You have the voice that says, I'm not good enough. You've got the mm-hmm. fixer uppers. And now, if I remember right, you start thinking, okay, maybe I'm going to have a village besides my therapist. So you hired maybe a matchmaker. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Because, I'd gone to a seminar with, put on by a dating coach at the time. And it talked about the different types and the narcissist and the fixer upper. And I'd never heard of that. I was like, oh my gosh, I picked the fixer uppers. It was like such a eye opening thing. So I figured, well, if my picker is bad, then, you know, I'm not even going to be the one to pick. So I'm just going to hire a matchmaker. Like, that sounds like a great idea.
Right. If I can't pick, let someone else pick for
me. Someone else pick for
me. Okay. Problem solution. No.
Yes. So, oh my gosh. And it's like, Bella, if I just think of the money I wasted on these matchmakers, because I did it more than once. And yeah, it just was, you know, I would give them the big interview of what I'm looking for. And then it basically just seemed like they were finding any guy that they could find off the street that was willing to, I don't know if they paid them to go on the date or how that actually works, but they were just, you know, not every single one there were, but the first, I guess the other thing about it, not only is it like it feels like they're just setting you up with whoever. In fact, one time, one of them wanted to set me up with some guy and they're like, well, he's separated. And they were like mad at me because I didn't want to go out with a separated guy. And I was like, no, been there, done that. I am not going out with a separated guy. But what was the other thing? Oh, well, the other thing was, you know, you would go on a date like, maybe, you know, once a month or once a couple months. And so, I mean, how are you going to find the right guy if you're like just waiting for the matchmaker to call and say, oh, I have somebody, you know, once a month.
Totally.
So that was terrible. I mean, the second one, I only used two, thankfully. But the second one, I mean, I think I had like one or two dates and, you know, I had signed this contract that basically said like I could never post anything negative online about their company. So, I mean, it was terrible. I don't know that if they're, she's still around. I can't remember her name, but so pretty much I gave her, you know, a few $1,000 and I got maybe 3 dates out of it. So $1,000 a date.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Oh my God. Ouch. Yeah. The majority of the clients in our practice have come in and thrown money at matchmakers. Sometimes they come in with matches left. And it's like, I think we've seen examples where the interests aren't aligned with the client. It's like, I want you to just say yes to this person so that I don't have to provide you other matches. And if I ask, if I can get you to say, yeah, after two dates, let's be exclusive. It's like sigh of relief, because then they don't have to produce more candidates, right? And instead, you want to be in a place, if you decide to have help, where their incentives are aligned with yours. Just like medicine, you have someone sick, you want to make them better, right? Whatever that takes, your incentives are aligned with the patient. And so, so it sounds like there was not good alignment.
Right. Yeah.
And so now we're kind of through this, you know, your picker's bad. We've spent money on matchmakers, coaches. So now you have really taken up triathlons. So now we're, I think we're in our 40s.
Yes. And all the while, I mean, I am on Match still and eHarmony and all those things. Just, you know, I would go on like, I would join, I would maybe be active for like a week or so. I would get frustrated and then I would barely log in, you know, so maybe dates here and there. But yes, but I discovered triathlon. You know, I'd always been a runner. I had this nagging hamstring injury. So I was like, well, I'll just learn how to swim. And I'd always kind of been interested in triathlon. And it's perfect for overachievers because, you know, three sports, you always have something to work on, always something to perfect. And, you know, I think it creates that drive. Like a lot of people will say they're addicted to triathlon because it just, you know, it's, there's always something that you can get better at with it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, eventually, like I started doing the shorter distances. And then at some point I, you know, I signed up for an Ironman. And I, you know, well, no one has time for anything when they're training for Ironman, which, you know, I was like perfectly fine with, because so I'm like, well, I'm just going to take a break from dating. And so I, so I was taking a break, sort of, but I had met this guy on Hinge, and again, like it was a one weekend sort of like whirlwind thing.
Courtship.
What'd you say?
Courtship.
Yeah. Courtship. Yes. But the one thing I will say about this guy is it was like a weekend of him taking care of me, in the sense that, you know, we cooked dinner together. He went to like, you know, to ABT to look at vacuums because my vacuum had broken, and helped me buy a vacuum. You know, we did just stuff like if you were with your actual person and kind of doing like, you know, regular things throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
And it felt so good. And even though, you know, like that's about as far as it went, it gave me like a little bit of hope, because I was like, okay, so that's what it feels like to have a guy who takes care of you. Like that was really nice, instead of, you know, me with all these fixer upper guys. And so then I got an email, just like a, you know, a group email from a dating coach about the Art of Love, the soulmate secret, I think it was called. And it basically was, you know, all these dating coaches, including you, at the time they were MP3s. Like I had to join, or not join, but I had to, kind of like sign up to then get all of these, basically they were podcasts. But at the time they were like MP3s, and you download them and then you listen to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, I remember like having my headphones in at night and listening to Ariel Ford, like, and sort of, you know, the introduction and just kind of going talking about, she basically was talking about like this, she was telling her story and she was like, this is how it was for me and this is how I felt. And I mean, I remember like everything she was saying, I was like, oh my God, that is me. That is me. Like, it was just so, it resonated so strongly. I mean, I probably even like shed a tear. I'm sure I did. I'm sure I did. It was, I think that was the first time I'd ever really heard someone in that position and like kind of verbalize like everything that I was going through. Because, and again, maybe I just wasn't tech savvy at the time, but I don't think there was like so much, you know, like podcasts where I can listen to all these. And it seemed a little harder to find at the time, or at least it was harder for me to find. So to hear her talk about all that. So, you know, needless to say, I signed up and then I was listening to all these podcasts. And, you know, first I was kind of negative about it, like, oh, this is never going to work for me. But I was just over and over again, I was listening to, you know, these like relationship advice and people talking about just what a real relationship is, you know, supposed to look like, or, you know, how to date. And it was almost like, I remember feeling like I was brainwashing myself because I just kept listening over and over and over. I would, you know, do these long runs because I'm still training for the Ironman. And I would do these long runs listening to all this stuff, right? You know, when I drive up to see my parents, I'd have it on in the car. And then, you know, it finally, like, I started doing some of the things that everyone was talking about, like, you know, visualize yourself with this person, or, you know, talk to the person like he's out there. And, you know, I would be running and I would be like talking to this guy out there as if he were, you know, able to hear me, like basically telling him, like, I'm ready for you to find me. The other thing that really helped was someone had talked about like act like you've already found the person or that, you know, they're out there. So instead of always sort of going around, you know, because I definitely, there were times where I was like, oh my God, this is so depressing. I'm never going to meet him. I'm sick of looking.
You have to act as if it's a when, not an if.
Yes, yes. That's like the negative
psychotic
energy.
Psychotic optimism. You've got to act like, I know he's out there. All I have to do is keep running the Ironman, stay on the path, and I will find him. And that's
right?
Because it primes you. It puts you in a place of hope, and it gives you the positivity to be able to see someone. Because if you are down and out, believing he or she is never going to be there, you're not going to see that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. And it just changes, how to say it, but like everything you do kind of then, I mean, you just feel better. You know, you're not, like, I mean, I remember just feeling like I'm enjoying my life more because I'm not doing everything with sort of that, like, oh, well, if, you know, if the guy were here with me, this would be so much better, sort of, you know, thoughts. So all that was happening. I do this Ironman. And then I was like, okay, I am ready to be the Iron Dater. I totally wrote that down.
I'm like, I love Iron Dater.
And that's when I contacted you. So I had looked back and actually, you know, cause like I said, I kept a lot of journals during all this time, and actually in May of that year, so the Ironman's in September, this is 2016. In May, I had said that I was thinking about contacting you, but I was like, well, you know, I had just renovated my place and I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready. So I put it off, but then as soon as the Ironman was over, it was mid-September or something. And by October, you know, we were talking.
I remember that you had heard me on an interview with Ariel, and dear listener, you've heard Ariel on this podcast twice, most recently talking about The Love Thief. And Ariel and I just had dinner 2 weeks ago in San Diego. So really? We're good pals. Yeah, yeah, aww. Yeah. So I remember that you were working very close to where I live, and we talked and decided quickly. So you had heard me on the interview, but then your sister and I know each other from being in college, and we haven't seen each other in 100 years since we graduated, but the power of social media and Facebook, right? She's like, hey, Laura, this girl that was in my house started this thing. You ought to talk to her. So our worlds collide in a variety of ways. And I remember our first meeting, you know, at the time, pre-COVID, we were meeting at the Four Seasons really clearly. Yes. And our goal for you was very much, as it is for everybody, to some extent, to fix your picker, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, we'll drill through, okay, you're looking for people that are more avoidant. They're not good relationship bets for you. Instead, we went through a series of exercises talking about the people that make you happy. What qualities are we going to prioritize?
Yes, yes, yes. I actually found that. I have it right here because I knew I had it somewhere. And yeah, I wrote down, you know, I have my sister and two of my really good girlfriends, and you had me write down like, what is it about them? It was called the happy list.
Yeah.
You know, why do they make me happy? Or why do I feel like I'm my best when I'm with them? And yeah, and then to look back at that when you are dating, you know, it did help me to get rid of a couple guys that at first I was really excited about. And then, you know, I'm like, ooh, he seems kind of critical. You know, and one of the things on my happy list was that this, you know, people that aren't judgmental.
Yeah. That's right.
So yeah, so that was a great exercise.
Right. And so really clarifying the things that make you happy in your happiest relationships, because your romantic partner should do just that as well and be cute to you. And you want to sleep with them and they have no red flags, right? That's like the Holy Trinity, right? Right. And so we got you online. You had a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. You guys will see Laura's photos. If you go to smartdatingacademy.com and you look at this podcast, you'll see how stunning she is. And the photos we did for our photo shoot.
Yeah.
And so you started really working our process. I remember, and for many of you listening, the thought of dating more than one person at a time seems anathema. Like, how can I do that? That's not right. But so you started with your dating funnel and dating more than one person at a time. And how was that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, first it was, you know, I don't want to say terrible, but it was hard. It was very hard because I was, part of it was like, I felt bad about it. I felt guilty. So, you know, that was one of the reasons I would never do it before. And again, like it wasn't, and with SDA, it's like, we're not going to sleep with someone until you're exclusive. So it's not like, well, I'm sleeping with this guy, but I'm still dating these other guys. It's just like gathering data, you know, it was that idea of gathering data. And I think I always considered myself, oh, well, I'm like a one, you know, guy kind of person. But, you know, the result of that was kind of what we already talked about, that I would meet someone, I'd feel chemistry. And then next thing you know, I'm like, okay, never unmatch again, you know, leave all these other possible prospects, you know, in the dust, because I'm all focused on this one person that now I'm going to try to get to know, but, you know, or he ends up being that he's like, just strings you along, you know? So you're like, okay, well, he's the guy. And then, well, he didn't text me for the week, but I'm waiting for him to text me. I'm not talking to other guys because I'm only with this one person. So that, I think, made so much more sense when I finally, like, I guess, you know, was given permission to do it that way.
Yeah.
Because then if one guy is not texting, or not, I shouldn't say not texting, if he's not communicating and he's not following up and he's not, you know, making a next date, it's so much easier to be like, okay, well, I don't care because I have these other three guys that are writing me or that are calling or texting, as opposed to just being like, oh my gosh, where is he? Why isn't he calling? And totally focusing on the one person that's not, you know, following through.
And that's the round peg, square hole, right? When you only have one, you're going to be like, well, the whole square, but this is a round peg and it's never going to work. But because we only have that one peg and that one hole, it's like a mission of futility. So now you have the permission, even if someone, and I know you went on dates with someone who, you know, was nice, but wasn't a good fit for you, was someone who was critical that we helped you to get rid of. So it's like, okay, and permission, right? But having that help, I always say we're like personal trainers for your love life, right? Like we're going to get people in, get people out, give you the permission, but then also tell you, I think you should stick this one out. And so I know now I tell everybody, one day that person's going to come in to your inbox. That's going to be the lid to your pot. And someone named Doug came into your inbox. So tell us, that was like, I don't know, 9 months after we started working together ish.
Ish. Yeah. Because so what happened was I dated a little bit with these other people. And then the critical guy, you know, we made it 3 months and he was like the typical, when you talk about, you know, they can only put on like their best face for so long and then the real person's going to come out. And that was kind of how he was, like everything was great. And then all of a sudden he became like more and more judgy and critical and just was not a very nice person. And thankfully, you know, I think in the past I would have probably tried to keep making it work. But instead, now I was at a point where I'm like, okay, I'm recognizing this. I know this is not good. And, you know, so I ended it with him. And it coincided kind of with when my 6 months was ending with Smart Dating Academy. And there was a little voice in my head that was like, oh my gosh, you know, you did that. You spent all this money. And now, you know, it's over and you still haven't met anyone, or you still haven't met, you know, your soulmate or your life partner. And then, you know, thankfully.
And that's not the goal.
I remembered like, no, I know what I'm doing. I learned how to do this.
I tell people this all the time. I don't care if you find love on my watch in 6 months, 12 months, or 6 years later. This is a process that nobody is taught from the beginning. And when you learn the process, you will find him. It's a when, it's not an if anymore.
Right. And I will say, you know, I understand how hard it is because, you know, you do have to treat it like a job in the sense of 30 minutes a day. You know, the only way you're going to get any replies or find, you know, or find new people in your new people out there is to, you know, every day be on
every
there.
Every day.
And, you know, there are days when you're like, oh my God, this is the last thing I want to do. But, you know, I think you guys had taught the thing of, you know, you kind of set up your environment, you know, light a candle, have some music on, like make it like a whole sort of process instead of, you know, like begrudgingly signing up into Match and being like, oh, I don't want to do this. But sort of like, ground yourself, set up your space.
Change your state. Have a ritual to embark on it when you get online from a positive place, right? Make yourself feel good, peaceful, have something lovely around you that makes you happy, and then look at the apps. Because if you're looking at it in Debbie Downer phase or God, I've just had the crappiest day at work phase, everybody's going to look annoying and degenerate.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. There were a couple of times where I probably dated too much, actually, at some point, you know, where I had so many guys in my in basket or my inbox, and I just was like, wanted to get through them. And I remember one week I went on like four dates And I wrote the fourth guy. I was like, you know, I was so burned out at that point of the week that, you know, I couldn't give him a fair shot anyway. So you definitely, you need the balance. But yeah, I kept at it, and it was like a month later that Doug popped into my in basket or my inbox.
And tell us what happened.
You know, he was funny. He wrote like a very short, he made a comment about, you know, he had a story about a Depeche Mode concert that he had tickets to, but he never made it to. And of course, like, I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan, and on my profile somewhere, like, favorite things, I had, you know, Depeche Mode. So of course that like sparked my interest. And he was cute and local, which was nice.
Not long distance.
Not long distance.
Not addicted to porn. Just kidding.
And yeah, you know, we wrote back and forth maybe a couple times, and then he called. And it was like one of those first conversations where it's just really easy and fun, and you know, we talked about all kinds of stuff, and it was a great conversation. And I think, let's see, I feel like our first conversation was, I should say our first date was maybe like a week later. So we just talked a couple times on the phone for a while, but I mean, not, you know, too long. And then he asked me.
Following the smart dating rule.
What did you say?
Following the smart dating rules, not too much time on the phone, kick the tires, and right. Then get to the date.
Yes. So he asked me out for dinner. So we went to a tapas place in town, and and it was just a great date. It was, you know, again, like, great conversation. You know, I was really attracted to him. It just felt so comfortable. And I think the thing about him too that then was different in compared to, you know, my past is that he was so good about following up. So, you know, after that first date, you know, I remember he texted me like to say he'd had a nice time, and I was, you know, and I was happy, but then, you know, you never know. I was like, oh, I hope I'm going to hear from him again.
Yeah.
You know, he pretty much called me, I want to say, every night. If it wasn't a call, it was a text and asking, when can I see you again? So he was always like following up. I didn't have to do anything. I mean, I just kind of like, I was like, I'm just going to, you know, sit back and let him. I'm not going to prod. I'm not going to push things along. And he just was always consistent. Like, when can I see you again? Let's go out, make plans.
He didn't leave you guessing.
Right. He didn't leave me guessing.
Now, what did you find out that he did for work?
So he was an FBI agent. He's retired now. Actually, he's a retired FBI agent. But so that was kind of exciting. I remember our second date, we were out for drinks, and he had just come from work. We actually went to the Art Institute. Yeah. And then we went for drinks afterwards, and he was like showing me his badge. I remember I was like getting I was totally sweating. Like, my palms were sweating. I was like getting all nervous, which we laugh about now, because, you know, when you're married to them, then it's like, all right, you're an FBI agent.
Right. You're like, wait, what? I was just a doctor. No, what? I know, we hear, it's funny. We had another woman. You're my third client that's with an FBI agent.
Oh,
what are the odds? There's another, you guys, listeners, you can refer back to Sylvia Fodi, another love story from 2022, who worked with Eileen and me, and who ended up with a guy named Rudy, who was a retired FBI agent in Chicago. Crazy.
Funny.
Yeah. Amazing. So,
yeah.
So, right. You know, they're not just good in the movies, you guys.
And I found out, you know, he had been divorced, and, you know, the timing was right. He'd been divorced for I want to say 3 years. And he had three daughters with his ex. They had adopted three girls from China.
Wow.
And they were babies. And which, you know, and that's another thing. I mean, I think at some point in my process, you know, I probably would have said, if someone would have said, oh, you're going to end up with someone that has three kids, I'd be like, oh, three kids, that's too many.
Right. And then three adopted kids. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And I think, you know, it kept things, in some ways, it kept it at a nice pace because he had them and he's always had them until now they're all three are either in or out of college, but he had them 50% of the time. So, you know, for quite a while, I mean, I didn't meet them until like 3 or 4 months in, I want to say. So we, you know, took that part slow. But so then there were weeks, it was like every other week, you know, he would have the girls. And sometimes we'd see each other a little bit, but, you know, it just kind of, I think, helped to pace our relationship because it wasn't like, you know, okay, I'm with you 24/7, you know, all the time.
Mm. And the way he spoke to you with kindness and like an elevator person and supportive, you heard him, I remember, would speak to his girls in the same way.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He'd be on the phone with them. And the first time I heard him say it, he would ask them, like, is there anything I can do for you? And the first time I heard it, I was like, I've never heard anyone ask their kids that. It was like the way he said it, you know, can I do anything for you? I mean, he always would tell them how proud he was of them. He was just very demonstrative in that way. And I think, and also very patient, you know, I mean, of course, with three girls, there's always a little bit of drama every once in a while, but, you know, he never got flustered by it. I mean, he always was, you know, was able to, you know, talk to the crying teenager on the phone who's all upset about whatever it may be and just be like so, you know, understanding and supportive. And I always kind of felt like I have benefited from that because, you know, he's so good with them. And he just, it's like he knows how to treat women, I guess, how it feels.
Those, you know, FBI but guys, they get a lot of training, right? You gotta be unflappable in a chaotic situation.
You do. Yeah. I mean, there'll be times where, you know, I'm panicking and, you know, which is why I did not go into ER. You know, I did family medicine where it's usually not like, you know, the trauma surgeon life or death situation. But he's like, you know, no panicking. You can't panic.
We don't need cortisol. We don't need fight or flight. Yeah. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so he would be the same way with me. You know, he still does that now. He'll just, you know, he'll ask if there's anything he can do. And
what a change.
I know. Like,
what a change. I remember you guys had been together for months and you pinged me. And I met you and Doug for a drink at Summer House, just as I don't know that he knew who I was in your life. I'm just your friend. Or maybe he did know.
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, I fessed up and told him, you know, the whole, most everything. I think I probably revealed a little more in this podcast than he might know about some of the past. But but yes, but he did know, and, you know, he thought it was funny because, of course, he was on Match for, you know, like a few months and met me, and he's like, why was it so hard? Like, don't ask.
Oh, my God. You listeners, they were so cute when I met them together. I just texted her afterwards and like, you're done. This is it. You found him. Like, you guys were just, like I say, I always look for easy, right? The communication was easy. You were both at ease. No one, it's like the energy was soft. It was playful. It was fun. We had a good time. And I'm like, I know what I'm looking for when I'm looking at a relationship. And this is it. You're good. And
Yeah. I heard one of your other, when you were talking to another you know, past client, and she was talking about how they both felt so lucky. Yeah. And You know, that was one thing Doug's always said, you know, is he's so lucky. And he always, you know, early on, he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky and you're so amazing. I feel so lucky to have met you. And of course, I feel lucky too, but it was, yeah, that just that such a mutual, you know, chemistry or bond or, you know, that we had or have. So it's been, you know, we dated for, so I met him in 2017 and ironically, I just finished another Ironman and I met him while I was training for that Ironman, but I didn't put, you know, the second one around, you're not like, it doesn't take up your life as much as the first one. So I was able to date and do that. And then, 2017 and then February, 2020, we got engaged.
Yay, you got your ring. You got the ring. Yay. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And I remember watching your COVID wedding because no one could come. And Lindsay and I were on watching it in the beautiful front of your house. It was so lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. He moved in during COVID. You know, we kind of made the transition of him to move in, and we weren't quite sure when we were going to do the wedding, but both of our parents are, you know, in their upper 80s, and we're like, we can't wait till COVID's over. So yeah, so we did the little front yard wedding.
So fun.
Everyone with their masks. Gorgeous. On.
It was beautiful. So beautiful. Yeah. And so you guys, I mean, listening to Laura's story, Laura was you, right? Picker, right? Long time, figures it out. Mid to late 40s, like, okay, it's time to make a change and learn a process. And then you did it. And you just did an Ironman. And now you're married and doing Ironmans. And how's your married life? Is it so fun?
It is. It is. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I went down to only half Ironman because you can keep doing those without, you know, taking up all the weekends. And I just wanted to have more time to spend with Doug. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's like, it's just that comfort of coming home to your person and, you know, feeling safe and feeling heard and all the things that you hear about from, you know, from all the dating coaches that talk about how it can be. And it's almost like you don't even realize how good it can be until, you know, until you find it. And then you're like, oh yeah, this is what it's supposed to be like. But yeah, I think you just have to really believe that that was a big game changer for me, I think, is when I really believed that he was out there and that, you know, we just needed to find each other.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you knew what to accept and not to accept anymore. Yeah. And the fact that you wanted a real partner, someone, you know, we call them high GHQ guys, high and good husband qualities. And you stuck to the rubric and you stuck to the process and you found the lid to your pot. And I couldn't be happier for you. If someone's out there kind of, you know, feeling like you did, you know, in 2015, 2016, is there any gem? You've dropped so many gems, I think, for people. Is there any, you know, parting words of advice that you would encourage them to do?
Yeah. I mean, the believing is huge. I really sort of do feel like in some ways I did manifest Doug into my life, and I would have maybe not thought of it that way before. I would have thought that was kind of like hocus pocusy. Yeah. But I really do kind of believe that now. And because of how much, you know, I mean, I talked to him and before I had met him, and just sort of was sending, it was like sending out that energy into the universe that, you know, that I was ready for him. So, and you know, I know people are going to be like rolling their eyes, but I really like, if you just give it a chance, you know, even if you're like, I don't think this is going to work, but I'll do it. It will work.
It will work. It's a when, not an if.
It's a when, not an if. Yeah. And just like keep at it, like be persistent. You know, that's one thing Doug says about me with the Ironman. And, you know, when I was looking for a new job and going through the process of interviews, he's like, you know, one thing I know about you are persistent.
Yeah, of course you are. Look at all the things you've accomplished in your life, right? It's like you grab a hold of something and you just keep going until you find it. And here, when you decided at a certain point that you were going to do things differently, you did things differently and you invested in yourself and you tried different things, right? Even though you invested in a matchmaker or two, you didn't give up in investing in yourself. It's like, okay, well, maybe that didn't work. So I'm going to try something else. I'm going to listen to these interviews. I'm going to hire a dating coach. I'm going to hire a Smart Dating Academy. And then at a certain point, right, it works. But you have to keep going to your point. And being persistent, you didn't quit with the first speed bump or the first paper cut. You kept going. And
you have to be persistent and trust. And, you know, and I trusted you and I trusted Lindsay. I mean, there were times looking back on my journal, it's hilarious because, you know, I didn't like what she was saying. You know, I wanted to go faster with certain guys that I was meeting. And she was like, you know, find out this, find out that. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm asking so many questions. I don't want to ask these questions, but they needed to be asked. You know, if you ask the guy, does he want to ever get married again? And he says, no, well, that kind of saves you a whole lot of time.
It's not your guy, right? He's not your guy.
Yeah. So Lindsay was super helpful in that whole process.
You know, I always say, like, our roles, we're the guides, we're the personal trainers. We will help you we give permission, let that person go, bring this person in, ask these questions and make you feel like you're not crazy, right? But then provide the second gut to say, keep going. And this is a process you can learn, ladies and gentlemen. You can learn how to do this. Someday, I hope that what we're doing is taught in high schools and college, and someday we can impact the divorce rate and the overall happiness rate in a more impactful way, because finding the lid to your pot, every study out there shows that when you're in a happy, healthy relationship, it's the gold standard for happiness and for health as well.
Yep, I believe it.
Well, Laura, well, if you want to see more of Laura's story in writing, go to smartdatingacademy.com and you can see pictures of her and her beautiful husband and read the process as well. And thank you so much for being so generous with your time and for being you and for being persistent. And who would have thought back in 2016 that someday you'd be telling this story on our podcast, right? I don't think any of us knew, sitting in the corner at the Four Seasons, where you'd be today. And I couldn't be happier for you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And thank you so much. I can't thank you enough for all your help and just for the fact that you exist and that you're out there helping all of us to find our person is priceless. So thank you so much.
Oh, I just got full body chills. Thank you. That means the world to me and to Lindsay. So listeners, I hope that Laura has inspired you to think about your own belief system. Think about your own picker. Are you picking people badly, chronically? Have you had help? Have you had a therapist that's helping you to get to the bottom of that? Now, therapists are different than coaching. Maybe you also need a coach. Maybe you need a therapist. Maybe you need something. You need change something up. Do what's in your power today. Be persistent like Laura. Be a dog with a bone and just don't quit and continue to change things, because when you do learn the process to finding love, it will happen to you. It's a when, not an if. So until next week, I hope Laura and Doug's love story has inspired you as it has me. And we bid you farewell. And until next week, adieu. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.